And, well, as you know, giant gravitons were first introduced as a way to satisfy the stringy exclusion principle in ADSM crosses N spacetimes, namely the fact that, as implied by the ADS-CFT corresponders, in the conformal field theory side, you can construct families of chiral primary operators, which in the anti-de-Sitter part are graviton states carrying angular momentum in the spherical part of the geometry. And since in the conformal field theory, these families must terminate at some maximum weight, which is due to the fact that we have a gauge group with a finite rank, this implies an upper bound on the angular momentum that these gravitons can carry. This is the string exclusion principle. Then Magrivi, Saskin and Tumbas proposed a way to satisfy this string exclusion principle in terms of so-called giant graviton configurations. Configurations in which the gravitons expand into a sphere, in particular an n minus 2 sphere, the spacetime is ADSM cross SN, contained in this SN, such that the radius of this sphere is proportional to the angular momentum that they carry. So this radius is bounded by the radius of the SN, and this provides naturally an upper bound on the angular momentum. In fact, it's very simple to see how this works explicitly. And this I will do now. This is the giant gravity. I'm going to present the giant graviton solution of Magrivi, Saskin and Tumbas. So this is the full line element for the metric on ADSM cross SN. In the anti-de Sitter part, we take global coordinates. It's interesting for later use that in the ADSM part, we have, when R is constant, an N minus 2 sphere. In the spherical part, which we parameterize in this way, also when theta is constant, we have an N minus 2 sphere. Now there is as well an N minus 1 for potential switched on, which is this one on Sn, where the chi's are the angles that parameterize this N minus 2 sphere. So what I did was to try and find stable test plane solutions where an N minus 2 brain had expanded on the spherical part of the geometry on the SN to a sphere with fixed theta while orbiting the SN in the phi direction. So the ansatz for this test brain solution would be take theta constant, take phi time dependent, and r equal to 0. Then the metric for the test brain, if here we make these ansatz, would be reduced to this one here, where we see this term is telling us that we have a spherical N minus 2 brain with radius L sinus of theta, and the other one, which is through the time dependence on phi, indicates that it's moving in Sn. So now we can take the action for this N minus 2 brain and substitute this particular background, which consists on metric and N minus 1 form potential. So this is the form of the action. If we substitute there for this particular background, we integrate over the space, over the volume of the brain, and we take into account the quantization condition of the N minus 1 form flux, we get this second line where this N tilde is an integer. And there you notice that phi is a cyclic coordinate. This is phi dot everywhere, so its conjugate momentum is going to be conserved, p phi. So we can go to the Hamiltonian, and the Hamiltonian depends on p phi and depends on this theta, which is the radius of the N minus 2 brain. Well, the radius is L sinus of theta. So we can find which is the equilibrium radius of this brain by minimizing with respect to theta, which in this case is very easy to do because you see that this is always positive definite. So we have a minimum when theta is zero or when this other thing vanishes. Both solutions have the same energy. H is p phi over L, so they correspond to massless configurations. And the first one, t theta is zero, so the radius of the configuration is zero. This corresponds to the point-like graviton solution. The other one has some finite radius because sinus of theta is finite, and this corresponds to the giant graviton. Now, for the giant graviton, the radius is, of course, bounded by L, which is the radius of the spherical part of the geometry, and this for the solution implies that P phi is less or equal to N tilde. So we have arising the upper bound for the angular momentum in agreement with the conformal field theory predictions. Now, these two types of solutions are BPS. I mean, they satisfy that their mass is equal to their charge, which is P phi in units of 1 over L. They will satisfy that phi dot equals 1 over L, as for a light-like object, and they both preserve the same half of the supersymmetries. This is the condition over the spinors, where this gamma 0 phi is the product of gamma 0 and gamma phi, being phi the direction of propagation. Now, this condition is the one that is the BPS condition for gravitational waves. This you can see as follows. I mean, you know that the space-time supersymmetry algebra in the presence of some solitonic objects, say for instance a membrane, which spans the 1-2 directions, is modified through the addition of a central charge, that is the charge of the bane times its volume. Now, Versov, Carlos, and Ortino also studied how this space-time supersymmetry algebra would be modified when we have a gravitational wave propagating, say, in the I direction. Then it is modified in this way, where now Pi is the central charge, which is also the charge of the wave. So the gravitational wave, which propagates in some direction I, carries momentum, has a charge Pi. Now, if we substitute the BPS condition, P0 equals Pi, this is what we get for the space-time supersymmetry algebra, and there will be some supersymmetries preserved, half of the supersymmetries, if precisely this condition here is satisfied. So this is really what we expected for gravitational waves carrying momentum P phi. So, okay, then we have these two solutions. The giant graviton solution satisfies the string exclusion principle. We have this bound for the angular momentum. We have this bound for the angular momentum, but we have as well the point-like graviton, which does not satisfy the string exclusion principle. So what Magrivis, Askan, and Tumbas discussed was that, in fact, the point-like graviton is singular, especially when you have big momenta, you have a lot of energy concentrated on a single point. And this singularity would be resolved by the gravitons actually expanding into the expanded brain configuration, so into the giant graviton. But, well, this is, I mean, it's like an idea, but the issue of the realization of the string exclusion principle became like less clear still when soon after their paper, Grisaru, Myers, and Tagford, and Hashimoto, Irano, and Itzaki found out that there were also giant graviton configurations in which the gravitons, instead of expanding into a sphere contained in the spherical part of the geometry, would expand into a sphere contained in the antidesital part of the geometry. If you remember when I showed you the metric, now the solution is very similar to the giant graviton solution, but the test brain is a spherical brain which is contained in the antidesiter part, an M-2 brain with radius R. So the same kind of computation gives you a point-like solution and a dual giant graviton solution, which, however, has a radius proportional to the angular momentum, exactly in the same way. But since this sphere is contained in the antidesiter part, which is non-compact, there is no upper bound on its angular momentum implied. So we have these three different types of graviton configurations. How is the realization of the string exclusion principle working with the three of them? Also, do they correspond to distinct states in the conformal field theory side or to different descriptions of the same state, perhaps in different regimes of the space of parameters? Can they mix quantum mechanically such that, in fact, we have a unique grounds, a unique graviton state? Perhaps this exists for when the momentum has an upper bound and it doesn't exist when it doesn't. So there are a few, I mean, several works in the literature discussing this issue, and I don't think it is completely clear by now. For instance, there was a paper last Friday by Vena and Warner who tried to clarify, I mean, or to contribute on this subject. And what they do, I mean, they claim that in fact the giant graviton and dual giant graviton solutions correspond to the same conformal field theory state, but in different regimes of the space of parameters. Well, the way they do that is by relating, well, in the next transparency, I will claim that the giant gravitons are described microscopically in terms of waves expanding into a spherical configuration. So what they did was they related the giant gravitons in ADS5 cross S5, which are described as waves expanding into a D3 brain, to a solution in 11-dimensional supergravity corresponding to N M2 brains expanding into an M5 brain. This is related by reduction and then deduality. And they found that the solution only, the giant graviton solution only exists for certain values of the space of parameters, and then the dual giant graviton solution doesn't exist. So the claim is that they don't exist at the same time, and they are, in a way, different descriptions of a single, of the same conformal field theory state. And with, in regard with the point-like graviton, they found that this is a singular solution, and the way it would be resolved is by smearing the harmonic functions, and this corresponds precisely to having the giant graviton solution. So this would be a way in which the string exclusion principle could be satisfied. So I'm not going to discuss anything more about that. What we would like to do now is to describe differently these giant graviton configurations. I mean, we've described the giant graviton as an N-2 brain, which has topology, the topology of an N-2 sphere and some angular momentum, P phi, in terms of the Born-Infeld action of this N-2 brain. This action is valid when the work volume fields are slowly varying, so when the radius is much bigger than the string length. It is, in this sense, a macroscopical description. Now, can we give a microscopical description in terms of gravitons actually blowing up into the expanded configuration? The natural thing is to try to connect this with known examples of expanded brain configurations, in particular with Myers' dielectric effect, and to try to describe giant gravitons as dielectric gravitational waves, because this charge that the N-2 brain carries, the P phi, is the charge associated to gravitational waves. So this is what we will be doing now, and is the content of these papers in collaboration with Bert Janssen and Rodriguez Gomez from the University of Oviedo. So let me first remind you briefly about Myers' dielectric effect by briefly discussing the example that he considered in his paper on the electric brains. Take a system of coincident ND0 brains in a flat background and in a constant Ramon-Ramon F4 field strength. Now, the system of coincident D0 brains couples two Ramon-Ramon potentials with an order which is higher than C1. And this is thanks to the fact that now we have non-abelian couplings that allow this kind of couplings in the one-dimensional action. Okay, where here this is the interior product, this is can be written as the commutator of xi xj, with C3ij, and then this is pulled back into the one-dimensional world volume. Well, here the pullbacks occur with UN covariant derivatives because we have an action that is UN invariant, and these background fields depend on the transverse scalars, which are now matrices, and the dependence is computed as a Taylor expansion centered in x equal to 0. When you do that, after an integration by parts, this is the first term that you get for this coupling, which is a dipole coupling, a coupling to the field strength of C3. So it is due to this coupling in the action that the D0 brains can feel this, this F4. So choosing a particular F4, take three of the transverse direction, three of the transverse directions, and F4 chosen in this way, then the ground state, the solution of equations of motion, is a collection of the is the collection of D0 brains expanded into a fuzzy 2 sphere. Why is that? Because the xi, these three transverse scalars, are basically the generators of SU2 up to this constant in the in an irreducible n-dimensional representation, because we have n D0 brains. So, with this condition, the sum from I equal 1 to 3 of xi squared gives us basically the quadratic Casimir of the group, and this can be interpreted as a radius square. So, this can be thought of a fuzzy to a sphere. Now, the configuration carries some C3 dipole moment, which is, and then we interpret the fuzzy configuration as a D2 brain with the topology of a fuzzy 2 sphere. Okay? A spherical D2 brain does not carry a charge with respect to C3 because the antipodal points contribute with the opposite orientation and therefore the opposite charge, but it carries a dipole moment. So the effect is analogous to the dielectric effect. I mean, in electromagnetism, in which you would have a neutral atom in the presence of an electric field, the charges would separate. So this is called the dielectric effect. What is the regime of validity of this kind of description? The regime of validity is when the action that we use to describe our system of brains is valid, the non-abelian action. And this is so when all the brains are coincident or are separated with distances less than the string length. How can we estimate the separation between the brains in the expanded configuration? You can assign an area per unit D0 brain, which is 4 pi r squared divided by n. If you impose that this is much smaller than ls squared, you get this condition for the regime of validity. Now, this kind. Sorry? Well, because you want the separation between your brains to be less than the string length, so that you can consider that they are coincident, and you can describe them by the non-abelian action that I have used in order to. In which you have this kind of coupling. So now, these expanded brain configurations had been studied before by Emparan from another point of view. He had described expanded brain configurations in terms, for this particular case in which we have D0 brains and D2 brains, in terms of a D2 brain with the topology of a 2-sphere, a normal 2-sphere, with D0 brain dissolved in its world volume, also with some dipole moment with respect to the three-form potential that would prevent its collapse due to the tension. And he had also found these stable spherical configurations. Now the regime of validity of his calculation was he studied these configurations from the point of view of the D2 brain using the abelian action associated to the D2 brain. So the regime of validity is that of the Born-Infeld action for this brain, which is R much bigger than LS, okay, when the work volume fields are slowly varying. So it seems that we are describing similar kind of things from two different points of view, which have complementary ranges of validity, unless N is very large. If N is very large, then we can have at the same time that this condition is satisfied and this condition is satisfied. So we should find agreement if the two descriptions are of the same effect between the two descriptions, right? And Myers checked that for this for his dielectric configuration. He checked that when n goes to infinity, in fact, the fuzzy two-sphere becomes an increasingly better approximation to an ordinary two-sphere. And in fact, the values of the stable radius that I didn't show here and the corresponding value of the energy agree precisely with that obtained in this macroscopical, say, or abelian computation of Emparan. So if we now go back to the giant graviton configurations, we are describing the giant gravitons in terms of an N minus 2 brain, which is carrying graviton charge, is carrying P phi, and has also some dipole moment. So it seems like we are really doing a macroscopical description of this kind of microscopical phenomenon that would take place for a system of coincident gravitational waves. So if we want to describe then the giant graviton in terms of the electric gravitational waves, that is microscopically, first thing we have to do is to construct an action for this system, for the system of coincident gravitational waves or gravitons, and identify there which are the dielectric couplings that are going to be responsible for their expansion. So how can we construct the action for coincident gravitons? Well, we know that these zero brains are gravitons in M theory moving along the 11th direction. So we could just say, okay, we have this M0 is the M wave, the gravitational wave in 11 dimensions. We could just say, okay, we uplift from type 2a to M theory the action for n D0 brains, and then we would have the action for n coincident gravitons in M theory. However, we know that this uplifting does not work as clear as that. I mean, if it did, then we know the action for a collection of non-abelian D2 brains, and then we could construct the action for a collection of membranes in M theory. So, but we know that there is a work volume duality transformation that one has to do that in the non-abelian case we don't know how to do, and this prevents us from having this action for coincident membranes. So we were not fully sure that we could just uplift Myers action to 11 dimensions, just like that. So what we did was try to construct the action for coincident waves in type 2a. This is the same kind of object in 10 dimensions than the waves in M theory. So we know how to relate these two. You just uplift in a transverse direction, just like that. So how can we construct an action for coincident waves in type 2a? Well, we perform some matrix string theory calculation. Why? I mean, matrix string theory describes type 2a strings with non-zero light cone momentum. So if you take Sensiber limit, you will map this light cone momentum into an spatial momentum. If then you take a static gauge and shrink the string to zero size, you would be describing non-abelian particles carrying a spatial momentum. That is, gravitational waves in the type 2a theory. A check that this idea indeed works was that in the abelian limit, you can check that this procedure gives you the action gives you the usual action for a massless particle, this one here, but Legendre transform. I mean, if here you say this massless particle propagates in some direction, say the X9 direction, and we make a Legendre transformation to write it in terms of P9. This is exactly what you get when you take here, using this procedure in matrix string theory, in the abelian case. So, well, I will present some more details about this later. But first, we want to study the dielectric effect. So we cannot work just with matrix string theory in a flat background because there are no dielectric couplings. But we can work with matrix string theory in a weakly curved background. This was constructed by Ricardo Schiappa and by Dominic Bresser, Bert, and myself. You just take matrix theory in a weakly curved background, which was computed by Cabat and Taylor. I mean, you have the flat part and the linear part with the linear corrections to the flat background, which includes the dielectric couplings. Cabat and Taylor computed which were the matrix theory predictions for the energy momentum tensor, membrane current, and five brain current in 11 dimensions. Now here, matrix theory is equivalent to a light-like compactification, or describes a light-like compactification of M theory for finite N. If you take sense cyber limit, you will be describing a space-like compactification ND zero brains, and you will be having a concrete matrix theory predictions for these currents that couple to the background fields in the type 2A theory. Okay, so when you substitute these particular predictions from matrix theory, you find, for instance, that this term, which is the coupling to the Ramon-Ramon one-form potential, is just the pullback of C1 into the one-dimensional world volume. This other coupling to the C4 is just the pullback of Myers coupling. So in fact, this matrix theory check was done by Myers in his paper. Sorry, I'm not sure I showed you this. On his paper on dielectric brains, as a proof that these kind of couplings were actually there, also predicted by matrix theory. So now we will do the same thing to construct a matrix string theory in a weakly curved background. The idea is just to take matrix theory in a weakly curved background and make 9-11 flip as usual, but you will have as well this term containing the electric couplings. So now the idea, once we have that action, for the we claim that is the action describing type 2A gravitons, we have two ingredients. We have the action for gravitons in type 2A, and we have the action for the zero brains. So we can just uplift into 11 dimensions the action for 2A gravitons. Then we will have an action for M theory gravitons, which is valid for backgrounds that are a linear perturbation to Minkowski, because this action is for weakly curved backgrounds. But we can connect this action with the action for the zero brains. We see that the connection is just this action is the dimensional reduction along the direction of propagation of the gravitons. So we can extend the calculation to more general backgrounds by comparing with the full square root that we have in Myers' action for the zero brains. Okay, and our aim is to describe microscopically giant gravitons in spacetimes which are not linear perturbations to Minkowski in ADSM cross SN spacetimes. So we need this full action. Then once we have this action, we can describe microscopically the giant gravitons in the ADSM cross SN backgrounds of M theory, namely in ADS7 cross S4 and in ADS4 cross S7. In particular, in those cases in which, from the macroscopical point of view, we know that there are some gravitons which are realized in terms of two spheres, which are the giant graviton in ADS7 crosses 4, because it expands into an N-2 sphere containing SN, so in this case this is a 2 sphere. The dual giant graviton in ADS4 crosses 7 also expands into a 2 sphere containing ADS4. Now, microscopically, we expect that these spheres will be fuzzy, because we will describe this expansion in terms of a dielectric effect, similar to what I was telling you about the NDC0 brains before. So we expect a fuzzy S2. In fact, the fuzzy S2 is very well studied, and we chose to check the validity of our action for those configurations involving this kind of fuzzy spheres. We found that, in fact, in the limit of large number of gravitons, we were finding perfect agreement with the macroscopical description. Now, this... Yes?
What are you checking specifically when you say agreement?
I will show you in a minute. Here, I just wanted to summarize, but you find the same value for the radius of the stable brain configuration and the same energy and the same potential. So, also once we have the action for the type 2A gravitons here, I mean, we have gone beyond the linear background approximation here, so we can go as well for the type 2A gravitons, and from those we can construct an action for type 2B gravitons by using T-duality, and then study the ADS5 crosses 5 background as well. In this case, both giant graviton and dual giant graviton involve macroscopically 3 spheres. So, microscopically, they will become fuzzy 3 spheres. However, we showed that this fuzzy S3 was really an S1 bundle over a fuzzy S2. I mean, if you describe the 3 spheres as an S1 bundle over an S2 base manifold, in order to describe the fuzzy 3 sphere, we just need to make fuzzy the base manifold. This we checked explicitly in our calculation and found also the exact agreement in the same sense as before with the macroscopical description. Now, of course, we wanted to provide a full microscopical description for all giant gravitons in ADSN crosses N spacetimes. Later, as I will present here, we studied the ADS3 cross S3 cross T4 background, which is a bit different in the sense that macroscopically both duals and giants expand into circles. So the issue is how to make that scene non-commutative. We have done it in terms of a fuzzy cylinder. And again, found a perfect agreement with the macroscopical description. So let me show you in more detail how this works. First, here I present the action for NM theory gravitons. So this action contains essentially, this is the usual Born-Infeld non-abelian action for a collection of brains where there are some differences, which are, for instance, there is this K that appears here all over the place. Well, it turns out that in the construction, the direction of propagation of the gravitons appears as a special isometric direction. I mean, there is no dependence on that direction in the whole action. This is this K mu is then the Killing vector, which is pointing on that direction. It is natural from a point of view that this direction is isometric because we are describing a momentum eigenstate. Also, at the level of solutions, Myers and Tafford constructed the solution associated to these giant gravitons in type 2B, well, also in M theory, is what they call the superstar solution, and this solution is also smeared in the phi direction. So we find this effect at the level of the action by noting that the direction of propagation is isometric. So we have the Killing vector coupling in various places in this action. Like, for instance, here, this E is the pullback into the one-dimensional work volume of the metric, which now is a reduced metric. That's why I call it this calligraphic G. because which essentially is the metric with the direction of the component on the isometric direction projected out. I didn't give the explicit example. And the three form of 11-dimensional supergravity can nicely couple into the Bornfeld part because it is contracted with a Killing vector, and then we can construct a two-index object. If it was not for this special isometric direction, we would not find this coupling here, and this is essential for the construction of the giant graviton configurations, as we are going to see. The operator with respect to which these objects are coupled is this one here, with respect to which these objects are charged, is this field here, which is really this Ka over Ki over K square is Gi phi, if phi is the direction of propagation, over G phi phi, which is, in N theory, the T-dual of a winding operator. So it is a momentum operator. It is a momentum operator. These objects carry a momentum. We find as well the electric couplings to the three form of 11-dimensional supergravity and to the six form, which is contracted with the Killing vector, and this is how it can couple in the one-dimensional work volume axiom. And now, as a check of the validity of this axiom, if we take the abelian limit, we can make a Legendre transformation and restore, say, if the direction of propagation is the phi direction, restore the dependence on phi dot. Then, if we introduce an auxiliary metric, what we find is that this Legendre transform action is just the dimensional reduction along the phi direction of the usual action for a massless particle. So we are indeed describing massless particles, but once you say the massless particle is propagating on some direction, this direction becomes special, and it turns out that in the Legendre transform formulation, it is isometric. And in a way, this is the more natural thing that one would obtain after duality chains. We have related this to the action of the zero brains, which have this same kind of structure, a Bornfeld part, a Chen-Simons part, in which there is the C1, the field to which, with respect to which these zero brains are charged. Here we find the same kind of expression. But it's describing massless particles. So, this is not giving any light about the symmetrized trace. I mean, you will find the same problems that you have with the symmetrized trace for the brains. So let's now use this action to compute microscopically, explicitly, some giant graviton configuration. For instance, take the giant graviton in ADS7 cross S4. This is an N-theory background, and macroscopically, we know that the giant graviton is described as a spherical M2 brain with radius L sinus of theta and P phi charge. So we take our fuzzy ansatz for the microscopical description, which is going to be this one here, where basically what I'm doing is the same this F parameter is written as a function of the radius of the brain in this way, as implied by this relation here. So now we have that the radius is L sinus of theta, so this is naturally our fuzzy ansatz. Now the gravitons have charge P phi, so phi is our isometric direction in the action, And we have as well a three-form potential, which in Cartesian coordinates looks like this. And this three-form potential couples in the Bornfeld part of the axiom precisely through this coupling here. So we have all the ingredients to substitute in our axiom for n-theory gravitons, and then what we find is this potential here, where everything, if it was not for the symmetrized trace, looks like it can be written in terms of the quadratic Casimir of the group. But of course, when you take the symmetrized trace, there will be corrections. So in fact, you have to do an expansion of this square root and to some regime of validity where we can neglect the corrections of the symmetrized trace, which is this one, we rewrite it as a potential in this form. Okay? Where here, up to that corrections, we have taken an ordinary trace, which gives us of the identity, which gives us this n in front of the axiom. So now if we compare with the macroscopic potential, this is here, you find this was in general, now we have n equal to 4, so we have a sinus of theta. If we compare these two potentials, well, it's a bit messy, but we are comparing this one with this one below, you find that if the momentum, this nt0 is the momentum, the macroscopic momentum, but of course in the microscopic description, the momentum that is carried by the configuration is the momentum of one brain, which is its tension times the number of them. So this is p phi. And then this in the large n limit, in the large n limit is when we expect to find agreement, is 2l cubed over n, which is precisely the n tilde over p phi that we have there. Once we take into account that p phi is nt0, and this condition between the area of the brain and its tension. Okay, so we find exact agreement. So this is an example. I mean, you can do the same kind of thing for the dual giant graviton in ADS4 crosses 7. In this case, it also involves a fuzzy 2 sphere, and you can do the same kind of analysis and again find exact agreement in the large n limit. So this is a check of the validity of our axiom for coincident gravitons. We use it to describe microscopically the giant graviton configurations as a dielectric effect for gravitational waves and find perfect agreement in the limit in which we expect to find perfect agreement with the macroscopical description. So now another example would be the giant gravitons in ADS3 crosses 3 cross T4. This is the near horizon limit of the D1-D5 system. It's a type 2B background, so we need the axiom for type 2B gravitons. This, as I told you, we can construct it by making T-duality from the axiom for type 2A gravitons. Well, in this case, there is some technical complication with this T-duality operation. The direction on which we T-dualize becomes also isometric in the type 2B background. This seems to have to be only a technical problem. We cannot restore the dependence on that direction, but for the description of the gravitons, in fact, becomes really useful because only because we have two isometries, we can couple, for instance, the four-form Ramon potential in the Bornfeld part of the axiom. We need to contract two indices, and we can do this by contracting with the two Killing vectors associated to the two directions. In fact, this coupling here plays an essential role when we describe microscopically giant gravitons in type 2B, like the one in ADS5 crosses 5, whose details I'm not going to give here. So we are going to use this axiom to describe microscopically the giant gravitons in this background. How are these gravitons described macroscopically? They are described in terms of a bound state of D1 and D5 brains. I mean, in this background, we have switched on Ramon Ramon two form potential and six form potential. So we can construct the test brain made out of D1 and D5 brains. These D5 brains are wrapped on the T4, and both of them are wrapped on the S1 included in S3, and focusing on the construction of the giant graviton. So microscopically, we expect this circle is going to be fuzzy. How we make fuzzy the circle by embedding it in a fuzzy cylinder. The fuzzy cylinder plays a role in the microscopical description of the supertube as well. So, okay, this is the algebra of the fuzzy cylinder. It's the algebra of the two-dimensional Euclidean group. This F is the non-commutative parameter. The quadratic Casimir of this algebra is this one. So, indeed, we can describe a fuzzy circle in the x1, x2 plane. But what's the role of this x3, the extra transverse scalar, or the extra scalar that we need to construct this algebra? Because from the macroscopical point of view, we only have a circle with geometrical interpretation. We don't have a cylinder. Well, it turns out that in the description of the action for the gravitons, as I was telling you, the direction on which we make the T-duality becomes an isometric direction. But if that direction is set, this is coupled explicitly in the action for the type 2a gravitons, after T-duality, we map it into some omega, some scalar field, which turns out to form an invariant field strength with the Nevesoir's 2 form contracted with the Killing direction. So it is interpreted in a way as fundamental strings wrapped on that direction, ending on our collection of waves. Well, thanks to this field omega that does not have a geometrical interpretation, in a way, what is happening is that the direction that becomes isometric is no longer there, so we have one less degree of freedom, but this is, we restore the correct number of degrees of freedom through the addition of this new field omega, which does not have a geometrical interpretation, but is also in the action. Now this field enables us to have couplings to the Ramon-Ramon two-form potential, for instance, this kind of coupling in the Bornfeld part of the action, because this has one index, there we have another index, and this contributes with this Q matrix with the two indices. This coupling plays a role in the description of the giant graviton. Now, however, the irreducible representations of this algebra have infinite dimension, so we can only describe infinite number of gravitons. Now, we have then all the ingredients to compute the microscopical potential. We have the action, we have the fuzzy ansatz, we know which is the direction of propagation, and this is the potential that we get. In this case, this potential is exact because the algebra is simple enough so that we don't get any corrections due to the symmetry trace. So we can write this exactly in terms of an ordinary trace. The only thing is that we get the trace of the identity and we have infinite dimensional representation, so this is infinite. But of course, this is due to the fact that our cylinder has infinite length. The potential that will have some physical meaning is the one per unit length. Now, let me first, before I discuss that, see what is now the minimum energy condition. Well, the minimum energy condition is theta equal to zero, that I'm not going to discuss because this corresponds to the point-like graviton. What would be the giant graviton is when F equals nq5 plus nq1 to the minus 1. When this term is vanishing. So we have that when we choose the non-commutative parameter in this way, we can have giant gravitons with arbitrary size because theta can be arbitrary and we have the energy is a trace of the identity T0, which is now the momentum, divided by L. Okay, let's, in order to understand this better, let's look better to the macroscopical Hamiltonian where we have a nicer interpretation in terms of momentum. Now I will match the momentum with the non-commutative parameter. Now in the macroscopical Hamiltonian, which for this background is this one here, we find that the minimum energy condition is a condition for the momentum. It's not a condition for theta. So when the gravitons have this momentum, and sorry, I didn't tell you what Q5 and Q1 are. These are the number of D5 brains and D1 brains that create the background. Sorry about that. So, The minimum energy condition is a value for the momentum. When the graviton has this momentum, it can have an arbitrary size, and for arbitrary size, it has an energy which is P5 divided by L. So this, the behavior of this giant graviton configuration is completely different from the one that we were studying in ADSM cross-SM backgrounds. I will now discuss in which sense this is related to the string exclusion principle, which is not, but let me first check the agreement with the microscopical description. If you compare the two Hamiltonians, you find first that this trace of the identity, T0, is the momentum of the whole cylinder. In order to compare with the macroscopical momentum, which is the momentum of a circle, remember that these D1 and D5 brains were wrapped on a circle, we should divide by L, compute the momentum per unit length of the cylinder. This way we also regularize it. This would be the P5. But an explicit realization of the algebra that I was writing before is this one here, which allows to assign a length of the cylinder, which is basically F, the non-commutative parameter, times the trace of the identity. Because in this realization, omega is a diagonal matrix which has eigenvalues running from minus infinity to plus infinity with jumps of unit f. So if L is f trace of the identity, we can write p5 as t0 over f, and then we find perfect agreement between the microscopical and the macroscopical potentials. So this value for F is really, for the non-commutative parameter, is really a condition on the momentum of the gravitons. So we find exact agreement, of course, not in the limit and going to infinity, because we are already there. We can only provide this description in terms of the Fassi cylinder for an infinite number of gravitons. That's why we find the exact agreement without the need of taking any limit. But still, the cylinder is non-commutative. The F is different from zero. This is the physical interpretation is really that omega does not have a geometrical meaning here. The length of the cylinder does not have a geometrical meaning. We don't care how big are the jumps, these jumps of unit F on the direction of the axis of the cylinder. Still, in the commutative limit, in the classical limit, when Q1 and Q5, the number of brains that create the geometry, go to infinity, the cylinder becomes commutative. In which respect are these giant graviton configurations related to the string exclusion principle? They don't seem to be related at all, because the conformal field theory predictions is that we should have some upper bound for the momentum at a value which is Q1 times Q5. Here we don't have, we have some special value for the momentum, which does not have anything to do with the prediction of the conformal field theory. In fact, it has been claimed in the literature that giant gravitons are not the correct supergravity duals of the chiral primary states of the conformal field theory of the D1, D5 system. So there is no kind of contradiction with that. Just the last transparency, what we have now left is to construct the giant gravitons in ADS4 cross S7, which involve Fassi 5 spheres, and in ADS7 cross S4, the dual giant graviton, which also involves a Fassi 5 sphere. Now, the problem with these higher dimensional Fassi spheres is that and this occurs already for the S3, is that you can always find SO6 covariant matrix realizations of this condition, but the problem is that the matrix algebras contain more representations than functions are necessary to describe the fuzzy sphere. I mean, they contain more degrees of freedom. You have to make truncations, and this is quite complicated technically, at the point that cannot be used explicitly for an algebraic computation as the one we are doing. However, if we describe the five sphere as an EOS1 bundle over a CP2, it might work, and it seems it does, that the fuzzy S5 can be described as an S1 bundle over a fuzzy CP2. And the CP2 has been already constructed in the literature by Trivedi and Baidia. The idea is CP2 is the coset manifold SU3 over U2, so work in parallel with the construction of a fuzzy 2 sphere, which is the coset SU2 over U1. So here what you do is you embed S2 in R3, and then take the non-commutative ansatz that these three coordinates are basically the generators of SU2 in an irreducible representation. Now, in the case of the CP2, it works similarly. Now CP2 is embedded in R8. We take the 8 Cartesian coordinates as the 8 generators of SU3. Now we have to be careful with the choice of irreducible representation, because here the SU2 over U1, I mean, this is made fuzzy because U1 is the isotropy group of any lowest weight vector in any irreducible representation. In SU3, the irreducible representations are labeled by two integers, m and n, which gives you the number of fundamental and antifundamental indices. Only the isotropy group is going to be U2 for irreducible representations of the type m,0 or 0, m. Otherwise, the isotropy group is U1 cross U1. So we have to choose this particular type of representations in order to make fuzzy this coset manifold. But, okay, you do that, and we are still in the phase of checking the agreement with the macroscopical description. So we cannot yet claim that this is the correct description, though it looks like. So just my conclusions, very briefly. We have constructed an axiom to describe coincident M-theory and type 2 gravitons that is suitable for the study of ADSN cross SM backgrounds, because it goes beyond the linear correction to Minkowski. With this axiom, we have explicitly constructed giant gravitons as the electric gravitational waves, and we have checked that there is perfect agreement with the macroscopical description in the limit in which this should happen. So, thank you.
Any comments, questions? Well, it seems not, so let's thank Yolanda again. So now we break for lunch, and then we start again at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I have here some leaflets referring to some show of Portuguese folk dance that's going to happen tonight. If any of you is interested, you can grab a leaflet from here, and we can tell you where it is and how does it work. We are not organizing it, but this is happening, so we are just distributing these leaflets. But if you're interested, you can come and talk to me about it, okay?